Life coaching and discovery. Inspiration with an invitation to learn from a self-discovery guide. Mark is passionate about you making positive changes in your life so that it becomes a vibrant, ongoing journey of growth and discovery. Welcome to the Inspire Possibility Show. Now, here's your host, Mark Susnow.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Mark Susnow, and you're listening to the Inspire Possibility Show, a production of InspirePossibility.com, your resource for creating new possibilities in your life. There's no better time than now. You're the one you've been waiting for. But sometimes we just need some inspiration and encouragement. And with that in mind, each week I have a conversation with individuals whom I consider cutting-edge thought leaders, people who are committed to making a difference in the world and expand our perception of what we might think is possible. And with that in mind, I've invited Stephen Kessler, the author of The Five Personality Patterns, to be my guest. Steve's book is a bestseller on Amazon, and I welcome Steve, and I think you're going to find his insights impactful in your own life. Welcome, Steve, to the Inspire Possibility Show.
Thank you, Mark. I'm glad to be here.
So you wrote this book. When did your book come out?
Last fall.
Mm-hmm. And what I like is your quote. You say, your experience of life is determined mostly by your habits of attention and the pattern flow of your life energy. What do you mean by patterns? That's what I was intrigued by, what you mean by pattern. What are patterns? And why don't we just start there, if you can explain to the listeners what you mean by patterns.
So what's important about that quote is really two things. One is that your life experience is mostly determined by habits of attention and habits of flow of energy through the body. And the second thing is that both of those things get conditioned into us as children into recognizable and repeating, even sort of compulsive patterns that we follow.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
those patterns of attention and of energy flow really determine our experience of life to a huge extent.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes, in a way, a prison that we each live inside, but we don't even realize it's a prison because we've never been outside often, and we don't realize that what we're seeing is really not the whole world, not the real world.
So what you mean by pattern is a like a certain attitude we have, a certain belief system we have that's kind of ingrained in us at an early age,
mm-hmm.
and we're not even aware of it?
Yeah, it includes all of that. There's patterns of beliefs, whole systems of beliefs.
Mm-hmm.
There are patterns of perception. There are patterns of what you consider to be important or not important.
Mm-hmm.
There are even patterns of how your attention habitually is held,
mm-hmm.
sort of what you're looking at of the whole world. An easy way for people to understand this is to think about watching television, and
mm-hmm.
you've got lots of different channels, right?
Right.
So you can watch the fear channel. You can watch the winning or losing channel. You can watch the follow the rules and be correct channel. Those are just three options.
Mm-hmm.
If you've been watching one channel your whole life, you think that's the whole world. You don't realize that this is only one channel on TV
mm-hmm.
and that actually there are other things that you're completely missing. And that makes it hard to understand other people and their experiences.
Mm-hmm. So how do we so we start to notice that I like your metaphor of the channel on the TV, and
mm-hmm.
so we start to notice this behavior that this particular channel we like to watch, and how do we so part of it is starting to notice that we're watching a certain channel, becoming aware that hey, why do I always and you say well why do I always tune into this channel.
Yeah, that actually is the hardest step, that very first step of noticing that what I am seeing, what appears on my viewing screen, if you will, mm-hmm. is not really the whole world, but is only a selected slice of the world, and I'm getting the same selection all the time. Mm-hmm. One of the big values of having a map of personality is that it shows you other possibilities besides your own habit.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start to think, oh, really? Other people look at it that way?
Mm-hmm.
And you start to think of your own particular worldview as one out of several, but not the one and only completely true story.
Right. So what I'm curious about is you talk about map, and I know we talked a little bit
mm-hmm.
before the show started. What exactly do you mean by map? I mean, when I think of a map, it's something, it's visual, something that kind of tells us how to go from point A to point B. And is that how you're thinking of it, or do you have something else in mind?
In a way, yes. So one of the values of the kind of map you're thinking about is it shows us where we are and where
uh-huh.
we want to get to. And
uh-huh.
by knowing those two things, we get some sense of what's the best way to get from here to there.
Uh-huh.
So a map of personality does that and a little bit more. It shows us first that we're not all the same. I remember when I first learned the Enneagram, which is another map
uh-huh.
of personality, back in 1987.
Uh-huh.
It was just a stunning revelation to me to realize that my lifelong way of looking at the world was one out of nine choices, and that there's all these other choices, and they're just
uh-huh.
as valid. And it, you know, it took me a while to take that in and go, my God, I'm not seeing the whole picture. So that's a big piece of what we get from understanding any map of personality.
Uh-huh.
Another thing
But Steve, you with your model, you're using five instead of nine. Is that right?
That's right.
Yeah. And
the Myers-Briggs map uses 16.
Uh-huh.
The number isn't as important as the discovery that my way isn't the one and only true and real way, and everyone else is
uh-huh.
just stupid.
So what you're hearing saying is that everybody has a way we look at the world, which is really conditioned
yeah.
by these patterns that we got when we were little. Is that
right.
am I understanding
we,
that correctly?
We have habits of attention. And
uh-huh.
that those habits of attention actually determine what we see and what we're blind to.
Uh-huh.
And that actually makes the world appear very differently
uh-huh.
from someone else whose habit of attention is to look at some other part of the world and ignore
uh-huh.
the part that we're interested in.
I'm having a little confusion what you mean by habits of attention.
Yeah.
Could you maybe speak to that, elaborate a little bit on that?
So if a person believes that the world is a dangerous place
yes.
and that the most important thing to do is to look out for danger,
mm-hmm.
then they are going to be paying a lot of attention to, is there any danger? Where is the danger? How can I anticipate the danger? They will be focused on seeing the danger. In a real way, they're watching the danger channel on their TV set.
Mm-hmm.
If another person, say, is focused on emotional connection between other people, and do I love them, and do they love me, and how do they feel about me, you could say that they're watching the love channel or the connection channel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're not seeing the danger part. And the person who's watching the danger channel is not focused on what kind of emotional connection do we have.
Mm-hmm.
All that is there in both people's world, but they're not seeing part of it. They're blind to part while being really focused on the other part. Is that any clearer?
Yes. So what I want to get at is you're saying there are these five patterns, these perspectives, these viewpoints.
Mm-hmm.
So I always look at if somebody's an optimist, they're going to see possibilities. Or if somebody's
uh-huh.
a pessimist, they're going to focus on limitations. Was that I mean, would you agree with that kind of idea, thinking?
Yeah, those are also habitual stances of attention.
Uh-huh. And you've gone from, you have five. So why don't we go through the five, and then at first, just tell me what mm-hmm. they are, and then mm-hmm. maybe we can, you know, go into more detail about each one.
Yeah, this map originated actually with Wilhelm Reich, who was a student of Freud, and it kind of went into the backlands of psychology for decades and decades. And it's now coming out again, and I have put new labels on the five patterns, because the ones that he had were really pathologizing and Freudian.
Mm-hmm.
So the five different patterns that that we've been able to tease out, naming them for their defense strategy, their safety strategy, the thing that they do to try to make safety for themselves,
mm-hmm.
would be called the leaving pattern,
leading.
The merging pattern. Leaving as in going away.
Uh-huh.
Leaving.
Okay.
Merging.
Uh-huh.
Enduring.
Enduring.
Aggressive and rigid.
Uh-huh. The last one is rigid?
Rigid, yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. And is there a relationship between, I mean, I imagine there's an overlap probably with each one, I would imagine. Is that right?
Well, each kind of these is a strategy that a person goes into to try to feel safer in a time when they feel unsafe or overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm.
So, first of all, these are not something that you just do all the time, no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Most of us come out of our patterns, and a person typically does two of these, not just one. But we tend to come out of our patterns and be more present when we feel really safe. And
mm-hmm.
as we feel unsafe, as we feel overwhelmed or scared, we will typically go into one of these strategies first, and if
mm-hmm.
that's working, we'll stay with it. If it's not working, we'll switch to our backup strategy.
So you're saying
that...
So
I know that it's a little complicated. Yeah.
Yeah, let me just see if I can make sense of this. So what you're saying is there's like a primary coping mechanism that most people have, and
yeah.
then if that doesn't work, they have a backup mechanism.
Exactly.
Is that,
exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
And you know what I'm
yeah.
curious about? Is there one of these mechanisms that is most people have? Maybe we'd start there.
I don't think so. I have not seen any real good studies on
mm-hmm.
the percentage of the population.
Mm-hmm.
And that's complicated, especially because a person doesn't just fall into one of these patterns and that's the end of the story.
Mm-hmm.
Each person tends to do two of them. Some people even do three.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got the difference of which one is primary, which one is secondary, and
mm-hmm.
sort of what percentage of time does a person spend
mm-hmm.
in one versus the other. So there can be a lot of variation. But there are five very distinctive basic safety strategies, and each of those then gives rise to a whole set of beliefs and behaviors and ways of thinking and ways of feeling, a whole way of being that makes up the pattern itself.
Mm-hmm. One thing I notice you say in your book and reference to your book is that as you learn about these survival patterns, you learn more about yourself, and then you learn to recognize these patterns in others. And
exactly.
So how does that help somebody? They understand these patterns in themselves and understand it in others. So how does that help them in the world?
Right. So with themselves, the more a person can recognize the difference in themselves between being caught in a pattern
mm-hmm.
and being present. Present, I'm defining here as you're not caught in a pattern. You're actually able to be here in the present moment, in the here and now,
mm-hmm.
and compose some kind of response to this present situation that actually works fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas when someone is caught in a pattern, they're really repeating a way of moving energy through the body, a focus of attention, a set of behaviors, a set of beliefs, even a way of perceiving the world that comes from the past. And it comes not just from any past, but from the past that was traumatic for them, from times when they were wounded.
Uh-huh.
So that tends to throw a person into a very unhappy state inside. So if you can begin to not only recognize which patterns you go into, but also recognize when you're in them,
uh-huh.
you can start to take steps to bring yourself out of pattern and back to being present. That allows a person to function much more
uh-huh.
successfully in the world.
So part of it is I guess what I'm trying to make sense here, what you're saying, is that some of us have a perception the way we see the world, but it might not really be the real way because our pattern is really more or less shaping our perception. So once we get
to
recognize that pattern, we have more freedom in our life.
Right. Our pattern is shaping our perception and constricting our perception. And it really becomes a prison. And there are many people who actually live inside one of their patterns all the time, 24 hours a day, and they never come out of it, and they don't know that there's anything else possible.
Right. I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to the Inspire Possibility Show, and today's guest is Stephen Kessler, the author of The 5 Personality Patterns, and we're starting to become familiar. How do we necessarily recognize, how does somebody recognize that they're in these patterns? How do they do that? You mentioned 5 of them. What do they do?
Yeah.
They say, oh, I'm in the merging pattern, I'm in the leaving pattern. How do we recognize them? And, oh, I'm in this pattern. What do I do? Do people have that conscious awareness?
Well, that's one of the goals I have for people in reading this book. I want them to become aware, first of all, of what patterns are in general and how they're different
mm-hmm.
from presence. And
mm-hmm.
then secondly, to recognize each of these 5 patterns. And I've actually
mm-hmm.
had lots of response from readers who
mm-hmm.
will talk to me or email me or in some way communicate that they're just floored when they read the description of whatever pattern they do most of the time. And they'll go, oh, my God, I've never seen such an accurate description of the way that I feel inside and the way the world looks to me. And this explains so much of my life.
So I found it very gratifying
to hear those things.
Yeah, I would imagine. Let's talk about how can people get your book? That's a big question. It's a great book.
Two ways.
And how can people get it?
So 2 ways. One is there's a website for it called, interestingly enough, the5personalitypatterns.com. You can either use the number 5 or spell out 5. I've done it both ways.
Mm-hmm.
So that website, the5personalitypatterns.com, and on that website there are also longer descriptions of each of the patterns than we can go into right now. And people can also go to Amazon and get it there either in print or in Kindle format.
Mm-hmm. And can people, do you give workshops or trainings on these patterns?
I do. I'm actually going to be doing a training here in the San Francisco Bay Area in Berkeley in July on this. It'll
mm-hmm.
be a 2-day workshop on Saturday and Sunday. And there's information on that on the website also, the 5 personality patterns.
So again, the website is the 5personalitypatterns.com.
That's correct.
Did I get that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you're available for individual consultations too, is that correct? For psychotherapy?
Sure. If people are interested in that, they can certainly give me a call and we'll talk it over. We'll see what we can do.
Mm-hmm. So let's... So the idea is to recognize when we're in pattern, and we did talk a little bit about that. And let's just go ahead, and what I want to do in our remaining time is to is what I'm more curious about is you recognize you're in pattern. How do you, is it you talk about taking steps to come out of the pattern back to being present. What are, what are those steps? How do people, you know, how can they tell when they're in the pattern? What are the steps to get out of it?
The steps to get out of each pattern has to do with that particular pattern.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not just one formula for getting out of all five patterns.
Mm-hmm.
But to go back and answer a little bit more of a question you answered a moment, or you asked a moment ago, in terms of the value of this in communication with other people, in addition to understanding yourself and what's going on inside yourself and when you're in pattern and how to be more present, if you can see that the other person is in one of these patterns and you understand what that pattern is like from the inside,
mm-hmm.
you can then understand how to approach them, how to talk to them, what to focus on that's actually going to help them feel safer and help them receive the message that you're trying to send. So communication gets a lot easier.
Mm-hmm. So by recognizing patterns in yourself, so you're able to recognize them in other people and recognize that maybe they're in one of their patterns and maybe not take their conduct personally.
Right. And to recognize that the fact that they see this particular situation so differently doesn't mean that they're wrong and it doesn't mean you're wrong. What it does mean is that they're looking at it from inside one pattern and you're looking at it from inside a different pattern.
Mm-hmm. So let's go ahead then and talk a little bit about some of these patterns. And I know the first one that you mentioned was the leaving pattern. So tell me more about that.
Yeah, so let's go through each of the five in a brief way.
Mm-hmm.
So the essence of the leaving pattern is that when the person is in distress, they leave. Now, they might physically leave the room or leave the situation,
mm-hmm.
but more importantly, their energy will go away from the place. Their attention will go away.
Mm-hmm.
Often, their energy and attention will leave their body. So
mm-hmm.
that's the way that they have learned to try to feel safer. They will dissociate. They'll disappear. You know, they might just turn and walk out of the room. Or
mm-hmm.
they might, if you remember the book, The Highly Sensitive Person,
mm-hmm.
that book is about people who are very deeply caught in the leaving pattern.
Mm-hmm. So somebody just says, hey, I'm done. I don't want to deal with this.
Yeah. And
or
they
I can't learn anymore. I'm an overwhelm.
Yeah.
Too much information here.
Because of the way they were wounded, both in the womb and shortly after birth,
mm-hmm.
they don't have a very strong energetic boundary around them. And so they are much more sensitive than most other people to incoming stimuli.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, they need to guard themselves. But the solution to it is not simply to avoid all situations. Part of the solution is to actually strengthen that energetic boundary so that they're able to not feel so sensitive and so overwhelmed.
Mm-hmm. So let's go ahead then and talk to another pattern. Which one do you want to talk about next?
So if we take these in sort of developmental order, the
mm-hmm.
order of the age at which it typically gets kind of set into a person,
mm-hmm.
the second one would be the merging pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And when a person who does this pattern is in distress, what they do is move towards the other person. They try to get closer. They try to
mm-hmm.
get more emotionally connected.
Right.
So they go into behaviors of pleasing the other person or accommodating,
mm-hmm.
placating them, being nice, you know, being flattering. Oh, you're so wonderful. I'm so glad to be here.
Mm-hmm.
And people who do this pattern also develop a very strong skill set of tracking what other people are feeling inside. They're really masterful at that.
So, but would you say, though, they're also empathic by being able to do that?
That would typically be true, yeah.
Yeah. And what about, you know, back to this merging pattern? I mean, isn't there a fine line between really, I mean, you almost get into, you know, also acknowledging somebody, seeing their greatness and seeing their possibilities. I mean, I think there'd be like a line between healthy merging or, mm-hmm. or acknowledgement as opposed to unhealthy. I mean, I kind of what I'm thinking, there's like a balance here. I don't think it's,
yeah.
you know, to I mean, what's your opinion on that? How do you feel
well,
about that?
Well, each of these starts out based on the person having the talents in order to actually succeed at using this strategy to feel
mm-hmm.
safer. Then
mm-hmm.
using the strategy over and over and over and over and over again in life
mm-hmm.
Develops those talents to a high level of skill. So along with each of these defense strategies comes a very distinct set of gifts that the person has as an adult that they can apply to life.
Mm-hmm.
And the gifts of one pattern are very different from the gifts of another.
Mm-hmm.
So empathy is definitely one of the big gifts of the merging pattern.
Mm-hmm. Would you say that in each pattern there's a gift?
Oh, absolutely. A whole
yeah.
set of gifts for each pattern.
Uh-huh.
So going on to the third one, the enduring
uh-huh.
pattern, when a person is doing this, when a person goes into distress and begins using this strategy, what they do is hunker down and just endure the situation. It's like, I can't get away.
Uh-huh.
I'm just going to sort of pull in my energy and get as small and low down to the ground as possible and not react. So energetically, they suppress all action inside, all expression, kind of a silent enduring, while sort of passively resisting anything, any attempt to move them. They go into
mm-hmm.
the strength of the rock, which is you can't make me, you can't move me.
Mm-hmm.
So people who do this pattern develop a very deep sense of groundedness and tremendous capacity to endure and persevere through something, but they also have difficulty with self-expression and often develop patterns of procrastination and self-sabotage.
Mm-hmm. So I'm seeing now, I guess, what I asked before, and you kind of answered, is that so with each of these patterns, it looks like there's a certain extent they're healthy responses, but at some point they become unhealthy. There's like a line, an invisible line almost.
Well, a little different. The good news is that if you've spent decades practicing one of these patterns
mm-hmm.
and you've developed a high level of skill with certain of your talents, even when you come out of pattern and you're present, you still have those skills.
Mm-hmm.
So you can employ those skills from being present in the situation.
Mm-hmm. And then we have I want to get to the...
Yeah, go ahead.
We're kind of running
pattern.
Out of time. So let's talk a little
yeah.
bit about the aggressive pattern.
Okay. So when a person who does this pattern is in distress, they don't send energy down and try to hide the way the enduring pattern does. They pull energy up in their body and they send it out the front. They kind of puff up and try to intimidate the other. They puff
mm-hmm.
up and they get ready to fight. So their way of approaching the world is to be as big as possible, as strong as possible, as intimidating as possible, and to just dominate everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
So if they're in pattern, they'll tend to be putting other people down. They'll be giving orders. They'll be getting angry. They'll be fighting. They'll be threatening people, bullying people. At the same time, people who do this develop a huge flow of energy through their body. They can become very charismatic, and they can develop terrific leadership qualities because they are able to handle being in a really difficult situation.
So let's just cover the last one real quickly,
yeah.
the rigid pattern.
Yeah, rigid pattern here. When the person is in distress, they contract inside to try to control themselves and control what they're feeling. So the flow of energy through the body is diminished, and the person resorts to acting properly and appropriately, to performing themselves. instead of actually being themselves. They literally get rigid, both physically rigid and mentally and emotionally rigid. Mitt Romney is a good example of this. You know, externally, terrific performance, made millions and millions of dollars, but when it comes to real human connection, not so good at it.
Correct. Yeah, I totally agree. So I want to thank you, Steve, for being a guest of the Inspire Possibility Show.
My pleasure. And, thanks for the invitation.
And I highly recommend your book, The Five Personality Patterns, your guide to understanding yourself and others and developing emotional maturity. I think we all could work on that. We all need work on that, and it's an ongoing process. So
absolutely.
Thanks again for your contribution to making it a better world.
Thanks very much. My pleasure.
Thank you.
As a life coach and life discovery guide, Mark made his career change in 2001. The lessons, insights, and unique questions are provided for you in the book Dancing on the River, Navigating Life's Changes. Go to Amazon.com now and buy a copy. And tune in to Inspire Possibilities Show on BBS Radio every other Wednesday, 6 p.m. Station 1. Do you ever feel there is more to life than what you are currently experiencing? Are you basically stuck in a dead-end career job or perhaps reeling from a toxic relationship? Everyone faces deep challenges in their life. That's why everyone needs a life discovery guide. Meet Mark Susnow of InspirePossibility.com and get inspired. Let Mark journey with you and show you how to navigate life's challenges as a mentor, as a guide, as a friend with immense energy to dynamically change your world. Schedule your complimentary coaching session with Mark Susnow now by visiting InspirePossibility.com and clicking Contact. You have nothing to lose and only inspiration to gain. Visit InspirePossibilities.com.
Hi, everybody. I'm Mark Susnow, and you're listening to the Inspire Possibility Show, a production of InspirePossibility.com, your partner in creating new possibilities in your life. There's no better time than now. You're the one you've been waiting for. But sometimes we just need some inspiration and encouragement. With that in mind, each week I invite individuals who I consider to be cutting-edge thought leaders, those individuals who are committed to expanding our perception of what we might think is possible. Every week I invite somebody who I think is special. And Jonathan Robinson is somebody like that. If you go into his house, you're likely to see an array of objects that have earned him the title of Dr. Feelgood. Jonathan Robinson is a best-selling author of 10 books. He's a licensed psychotherapist. He's reached millions of people throughout the world, and his work has been translated into 47 languages. He's made numerous appearances on Oprah, CNN, and many other national TV talk shows, and articles about him have appeared in dozens of magazines and newspapers. He's a professional speaker and seminar leader whose popular workshops on happiness have been taught in 6 countries. So, Jonathan, I'm excited to have you on the show and to find out about you, who you are, what you're thinking, about some of your gadgets, and I guess what I'm intrigued by is that It sounds from your description here that you're a very savvy technology person, and at the same time you're somebody that's been on a spiritual path most of your life, and so how do you merge the two?
Yeah, I get that question a lot. Well, you know, I think part of spirituality is being able to tap into deeper feelings of love, peace, and gratitude. And, you know, some technology for doing that is learning to meditate or do yoga, which I think are great things, but they take a long time to get good at, and they also take a long time to do. So I've always been looking for any technology that can help us tap into, say, the kingdom of heaven within more efficiently and effectively. And, you know, most people don't have many keys to that inner kingdom. So luckily there's some things coming out now that are really good keys. And when people find out about them, they do actually tap into a deeper place within themselves.
So how does that work? I guess what comes up for me is when you talk about how meditation and things like that take a long time and that there's like a easier answer, a quicker answer. But I always find that if you're relying on something else, when you're not doing that particular thing, you're going to lose that state of peace, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
If you're relying on an app, if you're not using the app, what happens then?
That's a good point. And in my book, The Technology of Joy, I actually have a chapter about that, because the best techniques, in my opinion, are methods that are easy to do, are relatively inexpensive or free, and you don't become dependent on them. They are like training wheels for a bike. You know, at first it helps you to learn how to ride a bike, and then you take the training wheels away, and by then you know how to ride a bike. So some of the methods I mentioned in my book, you can get addicted to because they are so powerful. But some of them are more like training wheels. They teach you how to get to a certain state of consciousness.
Uh-huh.
And then once you're there, you don't need the app or the gadget anymore.
Uh-huh. So what you're saying is the app or the gadget that you're talking about will be the training wheel so that basically you start to experience this on your own without them.
Yeah, just like, you know, how drugs can be addictive, but sometimes, you know, a person will take a drug and it will give them a forevision of what's possible.
Uh-huh.
You know, in the 60s, a lot of people took LSD, and I was one of them. And it then showed me that there's things beyond my mind, you know, and that got me to meditate. So I didn't, you know, stay dependent on the drug. I said, how can I get the same experience without the drug? And the same thing's happening with these new technologies, is that they can give you four visions or they can train you as to how to get to these lofty states really easily.
Right. What I'd like to do, Jonathan, is find out before we kind of get into what some of these apps are, and because I'm real curious about them myself, is kind of what got you here. What, I mean, obviously my sense is that at some point in your life you were searching, you were feeling a certain amount of despair, and you started thinking there's got to be something else going on here. I gotta, you know, I don't like where I'm at. What was it? Was there a crisis, a turning point for you that something happened to where you said I gotta change. I gotta look for something else. And then you just talked about taking LSD. Was that like part of your journey? If you got to this place and you wanted to experience LSD, and because you felt this way, or how did that come about? I mean, was there something
Right. I mean, you kind of nailed it. That I was very fortunate in that I grew up in an incredibly dysfunctional family, and
I like the way. That you said that. It's a great reframe. You know, people don't say that.
Well,
They're still a victim of the dysfunctional family.
Well, it's kind of like, you know, you sink or swim in that situation. And my brother and sister ended up sinking. They both ended up in and out of mental hospitals.
Wow.
But in my case, I, at age 12, said, you know, I got to do something different. So I got into hypnosis and meditation at age 12.
When you were 12?
Reading,
wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, and started reading self-help books. So by the time I was 16 and was experimenting with drugs, I had some experience. I knew that, you know, the goal wasn't to just keep on doing the drug. The goal was to refine my state of consciousness so that I could experience true peace.
Did you have like a mentor at this time, or is just something you intuitively felt like, hey, was it somebody was your guide?
At that time, I didn't have a mentor except for maybe the people who spoke to me through books. But around age 20, I met a spiritual mentor, and he was very helpful, both in encouraging me to try new stuff and helping me not go off the deep end, which you can do when, you know, you're trying out a lot of stuff. So that was incredibly helpful. And, you know, I kind of became like a, some people collect baseball cards. I collected methods for feeling happier and methods for feeling more peace and joy that took less than 3 minutes a day of effort, because I was lazy and I realized that if something took a lot of effort, I probably wouldn't do it a lot. So then I started writing books about these methods, and luckily Oprah liked my book, so it started to create quite a wide audience.
And what was that first book?
Well, my first book involved interviews with everybody, my 40 spiritual leaders, everybody from the late Mother Teresa and Deepak Chopra to Ram Dass, Marianne Williamson, the Dalai Lama.
What was the name of that book?
That book was called The Experience of God.
I think I've read that.
A lot of people have.
I think I've read
it
that,
well.
Where there are 40 people that talk about what they think God is.
Yeah, they answered
this
various
questions. This was done,
questions.
What, about 20, 25 years ago?
You got it.
I have that book.
Well, good.
I knew your name seemed familiar.
Right.
So you wrote that book, and go ahead.
I basically edited that book because mostly it's there, my asking them questions.
And Wayne Dyer was in that one too?
Yeah, yeah. In fact, Wayne Dyer eventually bought the rights of the book, and he sold it at his lectures.
Huh. Interesting.
So,
interesting.
You know, I was always looking, what are the best techniques? What's the best technology? You know, most people now who are listening to this program own some kind of smartphone because it's the best technology, and it makes life easier if you know how to use it right. But they don't necessarily know the best way to find peace within or the best way to find happiness. And the technology of those things is increasing literally every month at this point. You know, nobody's using a computer from 1980, but some people are using psychological and spiritual methods from, you know, the 1400s.
Right. So what about, so you had this evolution, this progression, this evolution, and you're reading more and more, and then you, so about 25 years ago, you write this first book about knowing God, about 40 people's, or you say you edit and publish it. What happened with that? Was that when you were on Oprah, or when that book came out, or?
No, I wasn't on Oprah for that book, strangely enough. I was on Oprah. My first, one of my books was called Shortcuts to Bliss. And once again, you know, I'm always kind of looking for shortcuts. And, you know, I'd ask people, Dalai Lama or Oprah, what's your favorite method for feeling better? And people had different ideas. And I put that in the book. And that was one of the times I was on Oprah was for that book. And
that was Shortcut to Bliss.
Yeah.
And so then, you become a psychotherapist, right?
Right, a very bad one, I might add.
Oh yeah.
Because,
Why do you say that?
Well, a lot of times when people go to a therapist, they just want to be listened to, And I was not that good at that. I was like, yeah, here, try this method. It'll work for you. You don't need me anymore.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I found out people didn't necessarily want to get better. They just wanted to complain. And I wasn't very good at listening. So that's how I got into writing, is I said, hey, if you use these methods on your own, you don't have to pay me $150 an hour. You know, the book's $8, and it'll give you everything you need. And ended up selling a lot of books that way.
And so then, and then you kind of, you went from therapist, spiritual guy, sounded like a real Renaissance person, to you became some type of, I don't want to say this, technology geek?
I'm not really that into technology per se.
I mean, to create these apps and stuff.
Well, I think of myself as a reviewer of them. So more not from the technology end, but more from what actually works, you know, and what doesn't. You know, as you enter this field, there's so much out there. 95% of it is crap, but 5% of it is fantastic. And it's been a hobby of mine over 30 years to find that 5%. So in the Technology of Joy book, I tried to give reviews of my 100 favorite apps and gadgets and tools and supplements for feeling good, and really save people a lot of time, because I think this field is going to change the world. And in order to change the world, people have to know what's the good stuff and what's the bad stuff.
So I want to remind our listeners, you're listening to the Inspire Possibility Show. Our guest today is Jonathan Robinson. He has a new book out called The Technology of Joy. And I'm just thinking, this field you describe is going to change the world. Have you come up with a name for this field?
Well, there's different names coming out. Some call it consciousness hacking. Some call it happiness hacking. Some people call it transformational technology. But in terms of it changing the world, I have a brief story about that. In 1972, I had the unusual experience of being in a high school that had just bought a computer. It was like the size of a refrigerator. And it basically played tic-tac-toe and a couple other games. And there was a guy in that class named Steve who was somewhat of a jerk. He was probably a pretty pushy guy. And he and I were always vying for the computer, and he was bigger than me because he was older than me. And one day I turned to Steve. Now, Steve ended up being Steve Jobs. We went to the same high school.
I knew you were going to say that. I knew it.
Now, at the time, though, he wasn't Steve Jobs. He was Steve, the pushy asshole who is always knocking me off the bench so he can use the computer.
Funny.
And I said to Steve, you know, why are you so pushy? Why are you so obsessed with this machine? And Steve looked at me like I had just said something really stupid. And he said, don't you see? This machine is going to change the world. It's going to change everything. And I didn't see that because, how is this 500-pound computer that plays tic-tac-toe going to change the world? It wasn't obvious. But I do believe these happiness hacks or technologies are going to change how we approach spirituality, how we approach happiness, because they're just a lot more efficient and effective than our previous ways, which are, you know, the way most people try to be happy nowadays is to try to control all the people and events in their life to be the way they want. And if that all goes well, then they're happy. Well, you know, that makes them happy about once every, you know, 4 months for 5 minutes.
Right. So what about, so I guess we should start talking about some of these apps. I mean, how do people get the technology? Do they get it on Amazon? It's the best way, or what's the best way for people to get your book?
Well, they can get it on Amazon, or I have a website called findinghappiness.com. At findinghappiness.com, you can get the book, or also I have free audio downloads of my favorite happiness methods that take under 2 minutes a day.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about some of them in our remaining time. What are let's just say somebody, you know, they've heard of you or they listen to this show and they go, hey, I want, you know, I'd love to be able to be happier for 3 minutes a day. I mean, I'm a meditator myself, you know, so I've been doing this for years and I do yoga. I like to do this. But let's just say somebody else is, you know, I want a shortcut. I just want it the easy way, especially because Jonathan sounds like this stuff's amazing. So what would you tell them? What would you suggest the 3 minutes? What would be the Jonathan Robinson 3 minute formula to happiness?
Well, it depends on what you're looking for. They might be looking for more pleasure, in which case I would say use some head tinglers. They cost about $1, and if you put 2 or 3 of them on you, you'll experience amazing amounts of pleasure. Or if you're looking for more peace, you might go to an app like Headspace or Buddhify and listen to really well-done guided meditations ranging from 2 minutes to an hour. But some of my favorites are things called nootropics or cognitive enhancers, which are pills that are safe for you and lead to feelings of more focus, more peace, and more joy. And I recommend about 15 of them in the Technology of Joy book. And they're relatively inexpensive, and they work really well. And they just take, you know, putting a pill in your mouth takes 15 seconds. But the
what are some of those?
For several hours. Well, there's one called sulbutiamine that I really like. There's one called aniracetam. There's so many of them that what I do is I mention a lot of them and say where people can get them. And I have no financial tie to any of my suggestions.
So probably you get these at the health food store, your local health food store?
Some of them you can get at a health food store. Some of them you have to get online. And the good news is that they're really effective. The bad news is that you generally have to try 3 or 4 of them to find the one that works best for you. So I recommend.
But what about people that are like, are there any caveats, you know, for people not? I mean, if people are, let's say, are taking some antidepressants or anti-anxiety things, should they maybe not try these? Or, I mean, is there, do you warn people? Are there side effects? Or
I tried to steer away from the ones that were a little bit controversial. But there are a couple that I recommend that are very powerful, and I say start with half a dose of this one because it will focus you and give you so much energy that if you don't like it, it will be unpleasant. So I do make caveats in the book because some of them can be more like a drug trip than a supplement.
My
master's thesis was on the therapeutic effects of the drug ecstasy, and I think that can be a useful drug in therapy. Obviously, now it's illegal, but once a week now I take a supplement that gives me the same effect, and it's legal and it's actually good for you. That one is called NuStax, and it's something available through a website called Web Nutrients. But you know, I recommend people have a day to experience that because it's powerful stuff. It's not like a half cup of coffee. You're going to be in probably a very pleasant, highly energized state. But a couple people have said that it just made them feel a little bit anxious or antsy. There are some caveats, and you do have to experiment around a little bit in order to find the one that rocks your world.
Right. So what are some other ones other than these internal supplements that are, you mentioned about the tinglers, and is there another 2 or 3 minute approach other than the supplements that someone can try?
Sure. I like the ones that are like training wheels. There's an app and a gadget called Inner Balance that teaches you, gives you second by second feedback as to when you are reaching a state of heart openness, or what they call heart coherence. And by having that second-to-second feedback, you soon learn what helps you to really open up to this joyous, loving feeling.
And so so that's an app you can download on your smartphone.
Yeah, and it also requires a gadget, which costs about $80. But the good news is that it can train you to get to advanced states of meditation much more quickly.
Uh-huh.
I've meditated every day for 30 years, but uh-huh. my wife, who hasn't because she thought it was too hard, managed to use
uh-huh.
this app and gadget and get to a similar place in about 3 hours.
Whoa.
Which
wow.
is nice. Saved her a lot of time because
uh-huh.
she used to hate meditation. Now
uh-huh.
she loves it.
Uh-huh. So in other words, she meditates regularly now, but she's done with this app or you're talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. So I see how the thing shortcuts to bliss. I'm kind of getting that now that, you know,
right.
that's your thing.
Yeah,
bliss
for
man.
Better or worse.
Bliss man.
Uh-huh. And you know,
so what,
it's not
what,
to avoid stuff, but I think the more good feelings you have, the more productive you are in the world, and the more you're able to also handle life's difficulties and
uh-huh.
and experience the sadness of life as well. So it's not about shutting out the world. It's about getting through negative emotions more quickly so that you don't have
uh-huh.
to spend your whole time feeling down, and you can be a better partner and parent and
uh-huh.
and seeker as well.
Uh-huh. So what you're saying is that you're not saying, hey, let's not feel any negative stuff, but let's just not live in them.
Yeah, yeah. And the world's a challenging place, as you know, so we need all the help we can get.
Uh-huh. So let me ask you, what's next for Jonathan Robinson?
Well, what I do every day is I get into a very peaceful state and I ask, how can I be of service? So I don't know what's long term, but I think what I'm finding is that letting people know about these keys to the inner kingdom is really what excites me, and helping turn people on to their full potential so that they don't have to just try to use money to feel better or use antidepressants that don't work very well, that they have a range of options and that they eventually explore and find what works best for them, because that's what I'm doing. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, I went from a suicidally depressed teenager to somebody who feels good most of the time. And I'm
mm-hmm.
very grateful for these methods and technologies, and I want to pass it on to other people.
Mm-hmm. And you, I understand too, you give workshops and trainings. Is that correct? Did I get
that
right?
Yeah, yeah. I give them in various countries and also various Fortune 500 companies. And
mm-hmm.
people like that because, you know, people are very busy. They need stuff that works pretty quickly nowadays, or they tend to give up on
mm-hmm.
it.
Sure. And you got something lined up soon?
Let's see. I'm going to be doing something called the Ecstatic Festival next week. Some of your listeners might be aware of the Ecstatic Festival. And then
where's that located?
That's in Pinehurst, California. You can go to,
uh-huh.
let's see, I think if the website is ecstaticnow.com.
And where's Pinehurst located?
In the middle of nowhere.
uh-huh.
It's somewhere kind of in the vicinity of Placerville or Angels Camp.
Uh-huh.
You know,
okay.
it's in the middle of the Sierras, basically. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So I, you know, it can sound like a lot of words until people try out this stuff. So in my
uh-huh.
workshop, I like to give people experiences. And once people have a powerful experience, then, you know, I leave it up to them to find out what works best for them.
Mm-hmm. So if people want to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
The best way is through my website, findinghappiness.com. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, they can email me from there, or that's probably the easiest way. And they can find
Good.
The book at findinghappiness.com as well.
Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on the Inspire Possibility Show, Jonathan. It's always great to, you know, talk to people that are on the cutting edge and find out what they're up to, what they're thinking, and it also helps me grow and make me a more aware person. And I know writing books, I know the commitment that it takes to write a book because I'm just finishing my second one. Mm-hmm. And it takes determination, commitment, and a certain level of passion to really have an idea that you really want to go deeper into. And so I want to thank you for your commitment to making the world a better place.
And the cognitive enhancements can help as well.
Exactly. So again, thank you for being a guest on the Journey on the Inspire Possibility Show, and we'll talk again. So again,
okay.
To our listeners, listen to Jonathan Robinson, written a book called The Technology of Joy, which I highly recommend. It's got a lot of great insights and perhaps can change your life. So until next week, journey on.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. 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 Imagine the possibilities.